For those of you not in the know, and also for those of you only half awake, this is the official business meeting of the 23rd World Science Fiction Convention. Yes, I thought I did that rather well too. For those of you who've got your eyes wide open, you can see where I am, probably behind the eighth ball. Now, I can see a lot of faces here who are attending their first convention. We don't want this business meeting to be too protracted. People fidget, lose interest, what have you, but basically this is what it's all about. In order to hold a world convention, you have to find 3, 4, 5 people as mad as yourself, and you form a committee. You find a hotel willing to house a convention. You settle your membership rates, discover what concessions, if any, you can get from the hotel of your choice. All this information has to be available to the members of this convention before you can put in a bid. Now, we have a rota system by which world conventions usually are allocated to different sections of the United States. I'm open to correction here because I'm never too firm or sound on these things myself, but I think it's in 3 sections. That's the West Coast, the East Coast, and the Midwest Coast. Oh, the Midwest. Yeah, all right, so give them a coast. I'm generous. I know, that's why I'm not doing business. Now, if anybody wants to upset this rota system for any good reason, they first of all have to get permission to do this. Now, this is what the first part of this meeting is all about. I'm not going to mention names until the business meeting actually starts, but one of the contenders on this platform wants to set aside the rota system. He has got 5 minutes in which to marshal his arguments convincingly that he has a good reason for doing this. The other side, who are in the rota system and in their rights to put in a bid, are going to give an argument against upsetting the rota system. Now, I'm speaking now to the established fans who know what this is all about. Old Dragon Parker is on duty this morning. I left nice, quiet, reasonable Ella Parker in the bedroom. We do not want too protracted a meeting. So, points of order, please, kept to a minimum. Let's keep strictly to the business in hand, for everybody's sake. And anybody who tries to outdo me or outtalk me is in for trouble, I promise. Now, we're waffling about like this because Archie Mercer particularly does not want to miss the business meeting or any part of it. Now, if any of you newcomers in the audience have any questions to ask about what I've already said, I, myself, or anybody on stage will be pleased to answer them.
We're afraid to.
Oh no, the dragon's asleep until the business meeting actually starts.
Come on, Archie. Go and rustle him up, Jimmy. He's checking out.
Germany or anywhere else wants to put on a world convention, It is given to us as a favor. We have no part in the rotation plan, and this is something that I would like to see altered.
No, you actually do have a part in the rotation plan. Any city outside of the continental north of America is eligible at any time to bid.
At any time, right?
Yes, but the point I'm trying to make is this, Fred. Don Ford wrote me a very nice letter, but he did point out that Cincinnati had graciously stood down in order that London's bid should win. Now, this was very nice of Cincinnati, but on the other hand, I would like it, I'd like provision to be made, say every fourth year in the rotation plan for an outside America bid from Europe, you know, Germany or anywhere. Just a minute, let me finish. And if in that fourth year nobody from Europe is prepared to put in a bid, then the rotation plan goes on until the next 4 years comes up. I don't see why this shouldn't be done.
Would Europe or even England itself be prepared to put in a bid every fourth year then? If not, why not simply stay exempt from the operation of the plan as is now the case?
Well, the whole point to that, of course, the answer to that right now, as I've said two or three times this weekend on stage, we do have a lot of new, up-and-coming, and very worthy fans who have never in their lives put on a convention and just might be suckered in to putting on another Worldcon in less than 9 years.
You can sell this at the Parker Convention, can't you, Ben?
Because it's an overseas bid to defeat the rotation plan, as it is for an out-of-order bid. Any overseas city can bid at any time as a part of the rotation plan without a special three-quarters majority.
The point made, which I think you took the wrong way, Ella, is that the London bid last year was unopposed. And this was the courtesy of the withdrawal of the Midwest bid, which Don Ford wrote you about. In other words, in 1956, when London was competing against, I believe, Berkeley for the 57th bid, it was a vote required, whereas last year, the would-be contenders against London simply withdrew their bid in favor of London so that London got the totally uncontested.
Yeah, but that's my point, Ted. It was done as a favor to us.
Well, no.
It should be our right in the rotation.
No. This is something which has been done for several years, that within general areas, the people have withdrawn their bid in favor of one city, which is then one uncontested. You might as well say all the last five winners or so have been uncontested, you know, as a favor.
Have we sufficiently confused you? Right, now that Archie and quite a few others have joined us, we will proceed with the business in hand, but just prior to that, we're going to be getting very heated in our discussion. I wouldn't use the word argument advisedly, but I do have a couple of short announcements to make here. There was a party in the Tricon suite the other night, and a pair of white high-heeled shoes were found. Are there any barefoot fan around? Also, there were some Mike Higg posters stuck up in the lounge outside, and they have disappeared. Now, I don't know who has them. We don't want them back. But Ben Jason would like the opportunity to photograph them before you take them home. If you know who has them, would you please tell them? Now, I feel certain that it would be much easier for you people in the audience if I introduced from this way around the people on the platform. First we have Dave Kyle. Next to him is Ron Elick. Here we have Dick Eady, Ben Jason, and Ted White. This side is Tricon. No! Well, I had to make one gaffe, and by God, it was a good one. I apologize, gentlemen. This side is Tricon. That's good. Three for Tricon. And Syracon. Okay? Now, Dave Kyle will be the first to speak. He has 5 minutes in which to give you his reasons for setting aside the rotation plan.
Would you read a copy of the motion, Allah, please? The motion that Ella is now about to read is the one that will decide whether or not Syracuse can bid. And we will present our case with 2 5-minute speeches on either side with a, what is it, 2-minute rebuttal?
Yeah.
And this is the resolution.
The Syracuse Committee, also known as Syracon, bidding for the 24th World Science Fiction Convention, requests that the following resolution be placed before the business meeting. Be it resolved that under the rules of the rotation plan, this convention permit the Syracuse Committee, also known as Syracon, bidding for the 24th World Science Fiction Convention, to place its bid before the business meeting for consideration. A three-quarters vote necessary for such permission.
Thank you, Ella. I hope you'll forgive me if I read this speech, as I've only 5 small minutes and I've just written this thing. This is a speech that I didn't expect to make because I'm filling in for Harry Harrison, who this morning is engaged in the very thing which makes this gathering possible, which is the business of science fiction. He and a number of other professionals are out on very important business for themselves. And he's gone for the day. So you have to put up with a much less exciting substitute in me. The question before us is very complicated, and I thank Archie Mercer for having, unbeknownst to me, distributed such a clear explanation, I think, within the limits of one page. Personally, as one of the committee seeking to bid for Syracuse, I feel that the 5 minutes allotted is certainly a ridiculously insignificant time to explain intelligently the reasons behind this motion, because people have talked for hours in their, or days in their search for understanding and constructive criticism of the so-called rotation plan, and I only have 5 minutes. So by rights, if we had a free and open discussion, it could go on all day, of course, and that was one of the reasons that it was limited. So I've had to cut away all the complexities, and I'll present the argument for adoption of this motion in very simple form, which is fair play. It's as simple as that, fair play. This is the simplified version of this argument. You're not voting now on the Tricon bid, and you're not voting on the Syracuse bid right now. You are voting on whether or not there will be any opportunity to have a choice. So a no vote automatically means that the Tricon will be the 1966 choice without even having heard whether or not they deserve the chance. Now, you have no choice under that system. Now, mark this. You're going to vote whether or not you'll be allowed to make a choice. Now, Syracuse says that, that we're still democratic, that you should have a choice, and if you think that the Tricon should win, well, then let it be a fair contest. Don't make this, or any science fiction convention, guilty of accepting, under the guise of harmony, one candidate, no choice, in your ballot. Now, I ask the Tricon, are you afraid of competition? Why won't you let Syracuse be heard? You think a one bid, no competition vote today is fair play. Now, why won't you let Syracuse challenge you to prove yourself better than Syracuse? So the question now is, will you vote yes on this question? Simply to permit Syracuse to be heard. This vote is not to elect Syracuse as the next convention site. This vote is just to let Syracuse be heard. So I ask you, vote for the Tricon, if you will, but vote for this motion. Now remember, this vote is permitted under the rotation plan. This motion does not attack the rotation plan. This motion is the rotation plan. This motion is the rotation plan. And I defy the Tricon to say that this is not the rotation plan system. Now, why do they want to block fair play? Why do they want to keep you from having a choice? I think that they're afraid of competition. I think that they feel that it's not as good as the Syracuse bid. Now, the point is that whatever you're talking about now is the idea of competition. So let me, in conclusion, quote Harry Harrison, who gave me this information this morning, and I quote, "As an old-time fan, the give and take in fandom is one of the richest, best, liveliest parts of science fiction fandom activity, even the fanish controversies, because we'll all end up friends in the end. These controversies are almost always inside the family of science fiction fandom. And on this basis alone, aside from the value of the Syracuse bid, and as made possible by the rotation plan rule, I'm in favor of permitting Syracuse to bid, even if I didn't have my personal bias for Syracuse." That was part of Harry Harrison's talk. So let's hear from Syracuse. Please vote yes on this motion. Thank you.
Thank you, James.
Ben Jason for Tricon.
Well, Dave, I've got a surprise for you. We're not going to oppose that bid at all. In fact, we're urging you.
Pointed at you.
I'm sorry.
Can everyone hear me in the back?
Pointed at you.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is better, right? Dave, I've got a surprise for you.
Yeah.
We're not opposing the right to bid at all.
Is that right?
Thank you, Benjamin. See what an opportunity Harry Harrison had to make himself another galactic hero. So somehow his script got mixed up. Well, it's our pleasure to present the Syracuse bid.
Just a minute, Dave.
Yes.
We've got to take a chance to take
right.
This in order. Well, now that this has been decided, I'm very delighted that it's been done so quickly and smoothly. We're going to be absolutely fair about this. We have an absolute new fan down here who doesn't know anything about it, can have no influence one way or the other. There are two pieces of paper in a hat, and he is going to pick out the name of the one who will put forward his bid first. Is this agreeable to all of you?
Ella, may I move that the motion be adopted unanimously?
Oh, I beg your pardon. You must keep me up on committee procedure. I keep forgetting that the Americans do these things so darn formally, you know? So, on the instruction of Dave Kyle, I move that the motion be adopted. Seconded by Phil Rogers. Anybody dissenting from this? We've got them all well trained this morning, haven't we?
They're asleep.
As long as you don't snore. Dave Marwick will pick out the ones that they put in his bid first.
Well, the name on this piece of paper is Tricon.
Tricon to bid first.
That's all you require of me, Ella?
Again, can everyone in the back hear me? Now you're okay, good. Now, I'm going to keep this very, very short, no more than a minute or so. To put on a good convention, only two things are necessary.
experience and a good record. And I think that we have both, and in quantity. With 6 chairmen from past conventions, and it was actually 7 before Don Ford died, we rank very high in the experience department. Some of our people have been producing conventions since the year 1939. Now, we may make mistakes, but with the talent that we have, we can rest assured that they won't be the same ones. We also have a long record of financially successful and entertaining conventions. And the 2 very important contributions that our group has made are first, the rotation plan itself, and a continuing system of Hugo Award and providing them. Now, on that note, I pass this mic on over to Rich Heaney here.
Our fellow fans, Stephanists, and Wild Pros too, I have a few words to say to you on behalf of the Baltimore, Washington men who put on 1 Worldcon and won 2 again in 67. For next year, though, we hope that the votes of this con will go to the Cleveland, Detroit, and Cincy mix who are bidding for Tricon in 66. We believe that the Tricon committee can do the job better than others presented to you. Mind, I don't mean to say that to say others fall below par. We are friends with all parties, or have been so far. But the reason why Cleveland should put the thing on is simply that they're the best site for the con. A centrally sited, accessible spot is one Tricon advantage. Besides that, they've got a committee with more con experience than any that's bid for a World Con since 1935, when the ISA began the tradition we follow today. We are not stressing rotation plans, but the expertise of the Tricon fans. Rotation's a method to keep bidding semi coherent, but what's really working for them is a net con attendance I hardly dare guess, and work on 5 World Cons, each one a success. So the fans of Baltimore, Washington, second Tricon's bid for the next World Con. We're sure Ben's committee can handle the chore as well as has London. Now, could I say more?
That's a tough act to follow. I am here to clean up for our side, and I represent another faction bidding for 1967 New York, which is a material here. The basic problem that we are faced with today is whether or not we shall step outside of the rotation plan, which has served us quite well since its inauguration in 1955. Not too coincidentally, Ben was on the committee of that put on the 1955 convention, which was then known as the Cleavention, which was the first convention I ever went to, and one of the best I've ever gone to.
Yeah.
And I know that he is capable of doing a good job, and with the power backing him up, I can't see any possibility of failure here. On the other hand, Dave Kyle has in the past also shown the ability to put on a convention, and I doubt that that is very much in doubt. On the other hand, Syracuse will be in rotation if they bid in 1966 for the 1967 convention, in which they will be opposing the Baltimore bid that Dick mentioned, the New York bid which I am in favor of, and I believe also a Boston bid. And I've heard it said that Syracuse loves competition. I think, therefore, that Syracuse would be much more fitting to bid in rotation after having let the Tricon get it this time, and take their chances in what can only be called open, fair competition of the sort which Dave Kyle thrives on.
The next speaker will be Dave Kyle.
Thank you, Ella. The Cleveland bid presentation is a bit confusing to me because they're talking about the rotation plan, which really shouldn't have anything to do with the presentation of the merits of the city. But as long as the question has been raised about the rotation plan, let me reemphasize that the purpose of the Syracuse bid, as Ted White pointed out, was to create some competition in a situation in the United States which had deteriorated to the point that there was no contest for many years, and indeed a lethargic and apathetic attitude toward the putting on of conventions, in which it was felt by some that it became rather a chore, an onus, and an obligation, rather than something that was deserving of being fought for. Syracuse's simple principle was to make the one convention bid something that required attention, enthusiasm, and to offer to fandom a choice of what should be really the best bid. That's the basis for this, and that's the basis for Syracuse coming today to make a competitive bid against another city. 1 year ago, I said, in Oakland, California, that if there were two cities with legitimate bids in the Midwest, that Syracuse would not bid. Now, I think that was the sum and substance of our basis for bidding. And that brings us here today. I think that Syracuse has had no small part in making the Tricon bid as strong as it is. I'd like to talk for a moment about the Tricon bid. What started out to be a weak Cleveland bid has evolved into a very strong Tricon bid. And believe you me, if Tricon gets the convention next year, it's going to be an excellent convention. There's no doubt in my mind about that. They certainly have the personnel and the experience to make it so. But what about Syracuse? Our battle was fought on two fields. And as a result, we really had a great deal of difficulty in spreading our time, energy, and money to cover those two fields. The first was the field of the rotation plan. And the second was the field of the actual bid itself. We have here, that arrived this weekend from V. Joe Trimble in California, a little brochure which explains the Syracuse Convention, why we want it in 66, who's behind it, what our hotel facilities are. I think that you have this copy in front of you. I won't go over this material. I'll merely touch upon the high points. What does the convention consist of? The first thing is the facility. You have here, this weekend, representation of what good facilities can do to a convention. A good hall, good acoustics, pleasure to come here and sit. Well, let me tell you that in Syracuse, we have what I think are the best convention facilities that I've ever seen. I have a map of the convention facilities. It represents a complete store, a floor of the Hotel Syracuse, which covers the entire block in downtown Syracuse, Syracuse's most modern hotel. This entire floor will be turned over to the convention. This entire floor will be just for the convention. The elevators feeding into this floor will be just feeding convention goers. The people that you meet on this floor will be people that are in the convention. There'll be no mixing of non-convention goers and convention goers. When you go onto this floor, you're in a science world. We have a large ballroom, which will be ample for our costume party, for our dinner party. We have the foyer. The foyer connects the ballroom on one side with a series of rooms on the other side. And these series of rooms we given to free for use to various fan organizations to use. There will be in that section over here on this end of the foyer a bar, a regular bar, not just a hall bar, but a regular bar with tables and chairs exclusively for the science fiction fandom. We'll have this very large room almost in the center of this entire floor, very large room which will be devoted entirely to the Project Art Show. a very deserving project. So you can see that we have planned to a considerable extent, planned so well, in fact, that we were ready last year to put on a convention should anything have happened to prevent the convention from being held here in England or to prevent Americans from coming to England. As far as our official recognition is concerned, we have a letter from the mayor of Syracuse, but more to your knowledge would be a letter which we have received and have here for display, signed by Nelson Rockefeller, governor of New York State, inviting us to Syracuse. These, of course, are more or less form letters, but they represent the status and prestige that we do enjoy. We have a guidebook for Syracuse, which will be distributed free in the hotel for visitors in town. We have a brochure from the Syracuse Visitors Bureau. I have copies of these here. You may all have copies of them. I have enough for you, if you wish them. With a map to Syracuse, with the information concerning Syracuse. Where is Syracuse? A very large city, a quarter of a million people, surrounded by another quarter of a million people, in the center part of New York State. It lies about 200 miles from New York City. It's the first time that Syracuse has asked for this convention, and it represents a new opportunity for fans to visit new places, which in many people's minds is one of the things that they plan on a convention. So, ladies and gentlemen, I hope that in my outline, within the 10 minutes allotted, I have been able to present to you the impression of the hard work that has gone behind our Syracuse Convention debate. You have the names of the committees in the booklet, and I'd like now to call upon our seconder to the nomination of Syracuse for 1966, Ron Gilley.
For Syracuse than to look at the names of the committee members and remember the work, for instance, of J.K. Klein producing photo album after photo album at the expense of considerable investment of money and time and a skill in picture taking that doesn't seem to be represented anywhere else in fandom. And people like George Heap and Cindy Heap who brighten up conventions all over the country. And Anne and Jim. Jim Ash Jim Ash, who are two of the hardest working, serious constructive fans to come out of the 1960s in America. You have a good compact committee that doesn't look to me like it's going to step on its own feet and is probably going to be able to put on one of the best conventions, lacking confusion, lacking any kind of foot dragging, by virtue of the small size and the interest of the members. J.K. Klein in particular, even Dave Kyle here, seem to have represented powerhouses of activity that haven't come out of previous convention committees in the form of the individual people working for the convention. Thank you.
Now both sides have a further 3 minutes for rebuttal. Now, as Sire Con has only just finished speaking, it seems logical that Tricon should go next, but first we must ascertain whether the people concerned think they need this further 3 minutes each.
No, that's
good.
How
about you? Right, they've all decided that it now comes to a vote. And in danger of becoming a bore, I will repeat exactly what it is you are voting for. You are voting for the ComSight in 1966, Syracuse or Tricon. Will you please vote, hold your hands up, and keep them up until members of my committee have had time to count you.
Hello. The custom has been secret ballot in the States.
Well, this you tell me now at this late date, and we've made no provision for it.
It's only necessary to tear up some pieces of paper.
Why does it have to be secret?
All I can say is that democracy is not done in a fishbowl.
Archie Mercer wants to say something.
There are two circulars lying on almost every seat, of which there is a considerable space at the bottom of the boat. May I suggest the boat that we use at the boat?
Keith and Jimmy, would you collect the papers from your side of the room?
Would it be in order to introduce a vote of thanks for Mr. Mercer?
Hear, hear.
Keith and Jimmy, don't collect more tickets from each row than there are people in the room.
He was being facetious. Members of the LOCCON committee are going to be entirely impartial in this, and they're not voting. Think about Project Art Show.
I have two items to announce. First of all, the bidding on the items on display in the art show is scheduled to end at noon. It will end at noon, provided the business meeting is then over, but if the business meeting runs a little bit past noon, we will hold the bidding open until the end of the business meeting, or until people can get in there. Secondly, I'd like to make the announcement about the Popular Vote Award. You people have had the opportunity to vote for the painting which you consider the best in the show, and I would like to say that for the first time in 6 years of the art show, the judges and the viewers agreed, and the winner is At the Tips by Eddie Jones.
That painting's up for bid, isn't it?
Yes. At the Tips is open for bid. It's on sale, and you can go in and write a bid topping the previous amount on a little green piece of paper next to it. And Eddie Jones will autograph you if you buy the painting.
While the counting's going on, I think perhaps I ought to tell you that after this part of the business meeting is over, George Sillars, who is our parliamentarian this year, will be conducting the next part of the meeting. What this is all about is a mystery to me. I've no doubt he'll tell us.
We have passed out to the audience the report of the Hugo Study Committee to the business session of the World Science Fiction Convention, London, 1965. I think that's somewhere around here close. The sheet is, to a degree, self-explanatory. I do not propose to read it aloud because you can read yourself much faster. Once the episode at hand is out of the way, we'll discuss it. Now, Madam Chairman.
Take a deep breath. One vote for St. John's, Virgin Islands. Will Bob Silverberg please stand up and take a bow? I'll believe you. One vote for Vienna. One no vote. Anonymous. Syracuse, 49. Tricon, 60. Tricon, 60. Before I depart, having handed over to George Sillars, quite a number of you are going to check out early, and I would very much like to take this opportunity of thanking you for having come along this weekend. I hope you've enjoyed yourself. Something I believe out of this world and entirely unknown, the committee enjoyed themselves too. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a bit of business now. For the Hugo Study Committee to the business session of the World Science Fiction Convention. This report is submitted by Richard A. Lupoff, Anthony Boucher, Harlan Ellison, Ethel Lindsay, and Joseph Esfalda. I apologize for the pronunciation of the last name. This report makes a recommendation. A recommendation by a committee, of course, can be accepted, rejected, referred to another committee, debated. The recommendation of the committee essentially is that the changes proposed on an interim basis for the Hugo for 1966 be adopted, clearly understanding that these are changes on an interim basis to be tried out, see if they work, a final report by this Hugo committee to be made at the convention next year. It would probably be best in order, I think, to discuss this report at a little bit of length. Are there any comments or questions on this report? Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, with the growing interest in science fiction in the television field, I would like to see adopted a Hugo Award for the best science fiction television program, either in the United States or in England, if it could be possible, provided that my country has the interest is shown to be growing.
The best dramatic presentation, the award for best dramatic presentation, is specifically worded to include awards to a best television program. At present, the best television program is simply a part of the best dramatic presentation. Comments on the gentleman's suggestion? Further comments on the gentleman's suggestion?
Aye.
Lenny?
No.
Ron?
I've never seen any good science fiction on television that wasn't a movie.
Here
it is.
You should have seen Asimov's Cave of Steel.
Oh, yes.
Yes, sir.
I'm just wondering, since this is best television, I don't think it is the best film. I don't quite know why television should get the priority over film.
I believe I may have... Well, your comment is directed toward the gentleman's suggestion.
Yes.
My comment is that, as the rule now stands, and no change was suggested by the Hugo Committee in the rule, as the rule now stands, the category Best Dramatic Production includes stage and television and movie on an equal footing. Is this understood? Yes, sir. If I may summarize, the problem with the dramatic production is that various dramatic productions, such as stage plays and television programs, are generally seen in one country and not the other. And this is represents a substantial handicap to the individual television award or the individual stage play. Have you any suggestion what can be done about it?
Suspend the use of the vote at all. It's an unfair advantage of America with a larger number of fans who see television, science fiction.
I believe you said that the situation is essentially unfair.
Yes.
What can be done?
Suspending television television.
Further comment on this suggestion?
It seems to me that the Hugo is important enough to merit quarterly fan base devoted entirely to a discussion of, for example, TV
play if it couldn't be seen over here. So that someone could get at least a general idea of what the field was, even if he didn't get to see the material.
The suggestion is that it would be well to have a quarterly publication. If I may interject a comment, who is to put it on?
That's the problem.
Yes, sir.
Is there any chance of them somehow having these various films and TV shows that are nominated shown at the convention and then voted on?
The rules that they presently stand require that the vote be taken in advance of the convention. I am not arguing for this or against this. I am saying the reason which is generally cited for having a vote in advance is so that the committee can prepare the awards, engrave them, and put pressure on the winners to arrive. The disadvantage of having, and again, I'm just quoting comments, otherwise I'm not expressing my own opinion, the disadvantage of having a mail vote instead of a vote at the convention is that a mail vote in advance does not pick up as many votes as a vote at the convention might. Yes, sir.
Might I add that this difficulty might be resolved by merely including the drama category in a vote at the convention, because this is, as it were, a corporate effort. You don't have to produce one specific person in the way that you do an author to receive the award. And I think this might be a solution to this particular problem, that the drama category could be voted on at the convention.
Barbara?
I was going to raise a point which you brought in kind of silence about voting by mail. The committee has made a suggestion here.
Paragraph, please. What paragraph, please?
Four. The committee has suggested that there be runoff votes, which in principle may be a good idea, but considering the length of time it involved in collecting mail votes, it seems that it would be completely impracticable to have to collect them four or five times during the course of the spring.
Let me take the liberty of explaining the meaning of paragraph four. This is a little bit complicated. Let us assume the novel category. Let's talk about the novel category just for the moment. Let us say there are three nominees. Normally there are five, but just for simplicity of explanation, let's say there are three nominees. Each of the voters, each of you, then would take a piece of paper and say, I vote for my first choice, my second choice, my third choice for the novel. Just assume this for the moment. These votes would be mailed in and tabulated by the committee, and the committee would do it this way. They would take all the people that voted first choice for novel A and pile them here. All the votes for first choice for novel B would be stacked here. All the votes which said first choice for novel C would be stacked here. So we have arranged the votes by their first choice, each person's first choice only, ignoring all others. Now we take a look at these three stacks and we find that novel A, novel B, and novel C, none of them have a majority. None of them have more than half of all the votes. Let us say that novel C got less votes than either novel A or novel B. Then novel C would effectively have lost. We don't know whether to give the award to novel A or novel B at this point. So we take all the people who voted first choice for novel C and see what did they write down for second choice, and put these votes that have been taken back on the novel B or the novel A stack. In other words, you voted for the last choice. Now, after it's determined you voted for the last choice, your second choice comes into play. And we distribute the votes according to the second choice by the people that voted for the lowest one. And this would continue with a field of three. It need only be cycled once. For a field of five, it may have to be named once, two, or three times. But this elimination procedure would simply continue until someone had reached a majority. This is the meaning of paragraph four, and it's difficult to explain it best. Any more comments? Comment from the floor, please. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, getting back to the problem of the drama category, would it be feasible to obtain film copies of the subjects under nomination to be shown at the convention for a vote on this final item?
The question has been asked, would it be feasible? I have an opinion, but unfortunately it's an opinion, not a statement of fact. So I must ask the audience, can we have some opinions from the audience? Do you think it would be feasible to obtain copies of films and so forth to show at a convention? Yes, ma'am.
In the first place, any movie or television company would be glad to give the movie if they thought there was a chance of getting an award, because this is publicity. In other words, it's money for the company. On the other hand, you do not get a good cross-section of fandom at a convention, and you have a certain lack of time. If you were to sit through 5 hour-and-a-half movies, a day would be shot. And I don't think there are many people that want to spend the entire convention viewing movies and television shows.
Also,
you have not mentioned, I think I've got an answer to that. It wouldn't be necessary for everybody to sit through it. Many people would have seen this film, or maybe all of them, but for those who didn't get a chance to see it otherwise, it would be a very good chance, and they would welcome it as a chance to see it at the convention, to form an opinion about it. And this, I think, would also solve this problem with those televisions that are seen in one country and not in the other. There would be an entirely replacement, I believe.
Now, let me explain something for a moment. There are 3 hands. 2 of the people who have put up their hands have spoken. The rule of debate is who has not spoken has priority over those who have. Joe. Sorry.
Well, I believe that a lot of television programs are recorded on tape. This is a pretty expensive process to handle. And I don't think that many conventions could afford to either put it in, or perhaps TV stations would not be that interested in installing equipment to allow these things to be viewed. Also, the TV systems, I believe, are different in Europe than the United States. That is a different screening, a number of lines that are used, and so on, and I don't think the equipment necessarily would be compatible, unless it was imported.
Mr. Williams?
If on tape, they can put it on film, easy enough. That's not the problem. But not all the time.
This is becoming a technical discussion on one category and is touching on areas which were not considered by the Hugo Study Committee. I would suggest, and this is a suggestion from the chair which you are quite encouraged to reject, I would suggest, though, that it might be appropriate for these points to be raised in writing with the Hugo Study Committee so that they can be thrashed out in writing at greater length than we have available at this time. However, I am still open for comments.
We have an anchor of Houston. I have one brief non-technical suggestion that this would weigh things more heavily against live drama than they're weighted already. Yet some very fine science fiction and fantasy live drama has been done in New York and London, both.
And Los Angeles.
And Los Angeles.
Additional comments on this point? Let us take a quick look at the recommendations of the Hugo Study Committee then. Specific recommended changes. Mind you, it is suggested that these be tried on an interim basis. The categories be maintained for the time being, except that the convention committee be authorized to, on a one-time basis, to withdraw any category and substitute any category, labeling it a temporary change unless it works out, and in that case it would be labeled a permanent change and ratified by a business meeting. It has been suggested that the convention committee itself be empowered to add a name to any of the slates of nominations in the event the convention committee itself feels that something was overlooked. as a point of clarification, this supplementary action is being formalized by a rule. In fact, the convention committee, voting as a block, can generally muster enough votes itself to put anything on the nomination it wants to.
Reading the article, it includes dropping, which is much more controversial than adding.
Any category can be dropped for a single year and another one substituted for it. This is what I should have said. I stand corrected. I apologize.
Well, if the committee can drop a category in which there are a number of nominations, as it did in deciding to drop the drama category last year, it causes quite a bit of ill feeling.
The committee would be aware of this.
Is it necessary to have the power to drop a category in order to add another category? There aren't but six. That isn't too many to have seventh or eighth without weakening the formality.
I'd like to point out that there is the matter of making Yugos. And this is an expensive process and time consuming for those making the Yugos to add categories that may or may not be necessary. If they are not necessary to add them, it is a waste of effort for some fans to do this.
If they're not necessary, certainly you
can. I beg your pardon. All remarks must be directed to me and obtain permission. The gentleman in the back. I'm sorry, Rick.
I think the power to drop ought to exist. There can be a year in which one category, there is nothing really which is worth it. And I think it's a great pity if Yugos should be given for something which are not really going to be regarded, looking back, as of the real standard.
I must clarify a point. The rules, as they presently stand, permit a convention committee to drop a category if there is a lack of interest. And this has been generally interpreted as a lack of nominations or lack of votes on the final ballot. The wording of paragraph 1 is that the convention committee can drop, not on the expression of interest, which takes some time to determine, but the convention committee can decide there is no adequate entry and drop beforehand. There is a practical reason for this and a practical disadvantage for this. Let me explain these two points. If the convention committee can drop a particular award and substitute another one, then it knows that it is still talking about a slate of exactly six Yugos. If it establishes a new category for a one-time basis and drops another, it knows it's got just six. On the other hand, a arbitrary dropping of a category by a committee can be considered an arbitrary action and resented. The gentleman in the back of the beard.
I have a point of information. I was just wondering, you say that they can only substitute, yet it states here on the sheet that they may modify the list of categories by temporarily adding, dropping, redefining, or substituting any of these four.
Right. They can drop a couple, cut the list down to say five or four. They can add a few, taking the list up to seven or eight. Then.
This case of this dropping was not, Richard referring to in the drama, was not on the nominations. It was dropped on the final ballot because there were more no awards than there were for all the items nominated. Now this is a difference than just dropping it primarily and not having nominations for it.
This is correct.
Could it be made clear what it implies to nominate in the final vote?
Well, the exact wording is, given year may modify the list of categories. I think this should be interpreted as modifying the list of categories for which nominations will be received. The list for which nominations will be received at all is the meaning here. The eligibility, no change. changes recommended. The area of voting tabulation, this has been covered. I am open to further discussion on this point. Yes, sir.
I'd like to ask, I see nothing particularly wrong with building a runoff system, but I would like to ask if this written ballot, this paper ballot, which we, many of us receive in the mail, could not be handed out equally well to someone registering on Friday or Saturday of the convention who has not pre-registered, giving him also the chance to vote. The counting, the addition of tabulation, doesn't seem to me to be that very difficult or complex.
The difficulty here, and if I may provide some information, the difficulty with having votes at the convention is that the nameplate on the Hugo cannot be engraved in advance, and the committee is then unable to use the various pressures and tricks in order to try to get the winners present to receive. Of course, the advantage of having voting at the committee is that you have actually a larger voting base. Danny?
I was just wondering about one thing. If they're going to use the point system, so to speak, in, you know, the first, second, third place and all,
this is not a point system. What you are saying is, I vote for novel A, and if novel A is eliminated because it got the least number of votes, then I vote for novel B, and then I vote for novel C. And you write down, I will vote for, this is my first choice. If he loses, I vote for him. But if he doesn't lose, I'm not distributing my vote. I'm saying, if my choice loses, who do I vote for? This is the essence of the multiple choice thing.
Well,
you still have the floor, Danny.
In a case like this, wouldn't it be possible to do away with the final balloting then? Just have a one bit and that's it.
The object of the nominations and then the final ballot is that, how many stories were printed last year?
Quite a lot.
The number of stories is so very large, and the nominations are already so widely distributed that the leading nominee represents a very, very, very small proportion of the total vote. The decision nomination ballots sometimes go break down with 20, 10, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3. The distribution, before you have collected some of the top choices together, becomes quite sticky. On the other hand, a single ballot system has the advantage that you're not taking as much paperwork. There are a couple of comments over here. Ben, I believe you have spoken less.
This multiple, or this choice system, is not going to necessarily get a majority. You vote for A first and B second, I vote for B first and A second, and they eliminate the first one, and the second one has the same number of votes, say, as the first one. We're not necessarily going to obtain a majority. But it's going to be done in this case.
Okay. After as much elimination has progressed, let me see. We have, say, a stack of five.
Yeah.
Five.
You can come out with your choices of everybody having the same number of votes, actually. In this course, this is not my case.
If you have a tie, then you have a tie. If as long as on a stage of the counting, somebody is less than some choices, some nominee has less votes than others, then he's eliminated. We keep taking off the lowest number of votes. You may have, okay, the winner may have less than a majority of all the votes cast, but he'll have a majority of all the votes that are left. It is a system which the committee seems to be recommending on a trial basis. We have no idea whether it's going to be good enough to make permanent. And for this reason, the committee, of which I am not a part, mind you, is suggesting this on an interim basis. They are not suggesting this be adopted permanently. And the wording of their recommendation is such that they do not even require that the 66 committee adopt this. They suggest it only. Your comment now, sir?
Mr. Chairman, I do not see how the argument against voting at the convention on the grounds that the Hugo cannot be prepared, that the ballot once is not going to remind the chair that Hugo were not properly prepared for this year's presentation.
Further comments?
This is an argument, it's true, but if somebody mentioned back here, no one showed up. This is, and I might also point out, having been on World Convention Committees, the committee is a little busy during this time and does not have, really have the time to bother with this counting of ballots and checking and so forth that goes on. All the tasks that a convention committee can eliminate prior to the time of the convention is a great help. Anything that can be done to cut down the actual work of the convention is a tremendous aid.
Ethel,
of course, will agree with me on this, I'm sure.
Ethel Lindsley has not spoken, please.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to point out to Mr. Lindsley that what they have been asked to do is decide whether or not to accept or reject this report, and that all these suggestions that they're making could be sent off to the Human Study Committee. The only thing they have here is a suggestion that this be tried on, this go on a trial basis. Therefore, if there's any of these things which are not just quite satisfactory, this would prove so on a trial run and could be amended. And therefore, I would like to know if there is anyone who thinks it should be accepted or rejected.
I would like to prevent you from cutting off discussion and continue through these points before we reach the... I would like to continue the discussion through the points. I may suggest now that we have covered point one and point two and point three, point one, two, and four in some detail. It might be well to turn over and take a look at the back page. I would like to move the discussion onward, but I can be overruled on this, sir.
What is the alternative to accepting this recommendation?
You can accept it, amend it, or reject it.
I know, but
or refer it back to another committee.
But I mean, if it is rejected, what will be the principles governing the New World Awards?
The present body of rules that was adopted in 1963. Voting time and place. This has actually been discussed to some degree. The question of, and of course, all voting, all points on voting tend to get mixed up into one discussion, which is as it should be. I'd like to cut down on the amount of discussion on voting time and place, because we've had several comments both ways. Do you have a point, or can it wait?
With regards to this voting time and place and the suggestion that the voting take place at the convention, there is sufficient publicity given to membership in the convention prior to the voting of the convention, so that anybody who is interested in voting on these logos has plenty of opportunity to join the convention early and therefore vote.
Let me give you some numbers. In the 1963 convention, we had on the order of 700 or 800 members total. We had on the order of 600 people attending the convention. We had on the order of 225 people who voted by mail beforehand. Clearly, the 800-odd is a very large block of potential voters. Clearly, not many of them vote. Again, simply numbers. Approximately 80 people nominated at the 1963 convention. This is a small voting. This is a small nominating base, indeed.
Have you thought of sending out postcard ballots referring more voting?
I have done this.
Did it work?
225. We got 225 votes using a postcard ballot where no stamp was required except for the English voters, since we didn't have enough 650 or 800 stamps. Item number 6, special awards. This recommendation is essentially that the matter be studied further. Are there any comments at this time? Special awards, strictly speaking, are awards given by the committee and generally to an individual. Special awards should not be confused with a category erected for a one-time basis, and the distinction is made fairly clearly in this report. The unasked question, there are various scattered recommendations, and the committee does not feel it has enough information now to act on any of these scattered recommendations. However, this is a good time to discuss them, I believe. Are there any items connected with the Hugo which have not been discussed up to this point?
Some of the items mentioned were a separate self-sustaining body, a general statement of principles regarding the Hugo, and campaign ethics. Are there any comments on these points? In the back corner, please. You next, Al.
As a newcomer convention, I don't know what you're going to do, but I'd like to ask, is there any provision for the nominating committee to decide or voters to say they consider no work worth it in some particular category in some year? I can visualize the situation currently where one wouldn't want to recommend any.
Let me summarize the present work rule and then the proposed modification. The present rule is that people making nominations may, for a particular category, say no one is worthy of a nomination. The present rules say that in the final vote, the voters may, for a particular category, say no one is worthy of an award. The convention committee is now authorized, on the basis of the nominations and or votes it receives, to declare a particular category has no award in a particular year. The modification which has been suggested is that in paragraph 2, I beg your pardon, in paragraph 1, the convention committee for a given year may modify the list of categories by temporarily adding, dropping, redefining, or substituting. This is a temporary change. The committee need have no basis for making these changes, other than that an unpopular change, of course, would be harshly criticized. In other words, it has been recommended that the committee be given somewhat more power to change categories in advance of the nominations and votes. Lewis has the next speech, please.
Page 7, the last paragraph. I was the person who proposed that a separate committee be set up for the administration too. This is not my original suggestion. Many people have done it. I worked out a constitution for this hypothetical committee primarily to find out how such a thing could be worked or if it could be worked. This, of course, needs a good deal of discussion if it is accepted or dropped. If anybody is curious as to just how such a thing could be done, if anybody were interested in doing it, I still have a number of extra copies at home of the tentative or hypothetical constitution which I grew up on this point. If anybody is interested in this, drop me a line. I'll send them a copy of this thing.
I would like to remark that the rules for the Hugos have been quite dynamic. The rules have been changed every few years to meet changing conditions, and at times the rules have been changed, so to speak, between years by committees who have found that the rules were unnecessarily restricting upon them. Rick?
I'd like to suggest that the fact that a con committee seldom runs for re-election makes the popularity consideration not a sufficient restriction on them in the case of changing the ballot. Committees have done some awfully unpopular things in the past, and they're soon forgotten in a year or two. They have fully enough arbitrary powers already.
Comment by somebody who hasn't spoken on this particular point? Comment by somebody who has, Ben?
I think Rick is quite wrong. Committees do run for re-election. There are a number of committees running for re-election today. We'll put on past conventions.
After some years have passed and these things are quickly forgotten, fortunately, they're quickly forgotten. They don't stop the committee on several specific occasions in the last convention and then a couple of conventions before that from doing things that have been unpopular, possibly not with the majority of the members, but with a large block of the members.
The Constitution, as it's now stated, gives the convention membership no control whatsoever over most of the actions of the convention committee. The reason is that one The one time it was attempted to set up such an arrangement, it was ghastly. Sir, in the back.
I think there's a lot of assumption about this unpopularity in action of the committee. Sometimes it can be a good thing to do something which seems unpopular at the time. And although I'm not saying it entirely this way, I think there's an argument. There may be advantages in a committee which won't be continuous with one next year. Having a freedom to do something, it may ensure that things don't settle into too much of a groove, and that can be a very dangerous state. And that's the case for the existing system.
In point of fact, of course, the ultimate control by the membership, let me use the word society for the membership, the control by the society over the convention committee is not attending the convention if things get too much out of hand as far as they're concerned. Mr. Lewis?
I think one of the major points concerning the JUCOs is that there should be a generally understood set of rules for their administration, a generally understood definition of the categories, and that these should be consistent and that the JUCO is stronger from year to year. I am therefore going to move that the JUCO committee report be amended by striking the second paragraph of section 4, number 1 there, of whatever the proper formal designation that is. That is the paragraph beginning, however, recognizing that art is a dynamic field and ending incorporating the 1963 document. I move that that be dropped.
I second that. I have a small suggestion which might meet the approval of the meeting. If the chairman of the 1966 convention would indicate what changes he plans, it might be better that we ratify what changes he may plan rather than forbidding any changes at all. I think the suggestion is to have a few minutes to think. Do you wish to make any amendments? And if you do, would you like to indicate what changes you plan in the list of categories so that the meeting can take a look at them? Rather than remove your right to make changes, I think it might be better to consider what changes he would like and give the meeting a chance to ratify them. Now, can the discussion go on some other points while Mr. Jason is thinking? Danny?
Yes, this has to do with the thing you were just discussing, the categories. I've often been of the opinion that it's unfair for a very brief, short story, say perhaps 4 or 5 pages, to compete with something which is perhaps 35 pages long. I think they're an entirely different sort of category, and I wonder if the short fiction couldn't be further split up into perhaps 2 groups.
This was done at one time. It's not being done currently. I think this is something which had best be worked out with the committee, but I'm making the suggestion to be worked out with the JUCO committee simply because we're running a little bit short of time. Will you accept the suggestion or do you wish to press it? Press the point.
I'd like to state a little bit, having worked a bit on the Chicago convention, working in this matter of category, it gets pretty sticky sometimes if you have no alternatives but to just follow these several categories, and you cannot modify the system as you intend to freeze it now. It's difficult. There's sometimes very little interest, or there's very little value, let's say, in the area of drama. And yet, if you have a drama category, you have to fill it.
Mr. Williams?
We have the then professional magazine and best amateur magazine, but we only have a best professional artist. Why not a best amateur artist?
The committee, I believe, mentioned elsewhere that it's considered more or less fan awards and seems to settle down on just one.